Hello, and welcome to the dating edition of the Empowered Divorce Summit. My name is Heather Deversini, and I'll be your host throughout this event. Today, we're joined by Dr. Anne Brown. Dr. Brown is an author, speaker, and therapist in Sausalito, California. For over 20 years, she served as a trusted advocate and advisor to influential corporate leaders, trial attorneys, athletes, physicians, and their families. So thank you for joining us today, Anne.
Delighted to be here.
You know, this is your second time appearing in the summits, and I just want to start off by saying you have wonderful blog posts on your website, backbonepower.com, that offer insights into, you know, the power of saying no and the cost of people-pleasing. Can you share with us why it's so important to worry less about pleasing others and saying no?
You know, I would have answered this differently about a month ago, but I've been doing a lot of reading about this ISIS situation, and so I'm even more committed to my message. Financially, you cannot take care of yourself if you cannot ask for raises, say no to bad behavior, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. You know, if you're constantly saying yes to other people, your body's just going to break down. But the movement on the other side of the world is really based so much on oppressing women. And we just can't let that happen. We cannot take for granted that your listeners can get divorced in this country.
Yes.
And we have to keep the movement going that we are individuals, we have a voice, we need to take a stand. We need to take a stand for ourselves as well as people who can't.
Right.
So I think if you just look, the cost to you is financial, spiritual, emotional, physical. It's across the board when you can't take care of yourself.
Correct. And I think that I know even after doing the last summit, I spoke with someone and they were in, I want to say they were in Denmark or Sweden, something like that. And they're, even there, the laws and the way, you know, and that's, you know, I would consider that to be a very developed country, are very limiting for women.
And, right. And I think we forget that in the United States, and we can't. We really can't. We have to keep that energy going because we don't want their energy to pull us backward.
Correct, correct. So what are some examples of people-pleasing behaviors that could be hurting one of our listeners' chances of finding, you know, that perfect partner?
Well, I think the most important is you just can't be a chameleon. When you wake up in the morning and you start your day by how can I make other people like me or avoid conflict, you've already lost the day. You've lost yourself. Nobody knows who you are. If you don't have opinions, boundaries, requests of your mate, you can have all the intuition in the world, but you don't have it about yourself because the person doesn't know who you are. You need to arrive with whatever your standard is, and particularly after divorce, take a look at what your standard for your partner is. You know, if you, on the first date, if you want someone to pick you up, then you take a stand for that. I'm not going to meet you, you know, here's where I live, come pick me up, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the number one thing is just don't be a chameleon. I know everybody's on their best behavior, and that's okay, but don't say things that misrepresent you.
Right. Well, I think that applies because, well, not because, that applies when you are putting yourself forward as something other than who you really are. You're not only hurting yourself, but you're hurting them, and you're really not giving them the benefit of the doubt because you're assuming that they won't be able to handle you, like you, deal with you, whatever it is. You're just making that assumption about them. And
well, I'm glad you said that because so many people don't realize that. I actually think it's an insult if you don't think I can handle who you really are. So I would definitely piggyback on what you're saying. You know,
Yeah. Who
are you to think that I can't handle you having a different opinion with me?
Right. So if you truly value a person and you are valuing them, it's just as important to be yourself with them as it is for you, because you are showing them that respect and that value that you hold, you know, and that place that you hold them in by being who you really are.
Yep. Absolutely.
Right. And so what are some ways that listeners can use Backbone Power to help them trust their intuition about potential partners?
Well, if you set boundaries, if you let the person know who you are, if you sort of follow Steve Harvey and my recommendation, corporations don't give benefits for 90 days. If you kind of take time and look at someone in those 90 days, I think when your intuition says, wow, this feels like a like mind, and I've made requests and I've pushed back and we have differences of opinions here, but we have the same virtues and values that are important to us, then I think you really have something you can hang your hat on. But if you just agree with the person, whatever they say, and accommodate and only do their world, don't insist that they meet your world, and I'm not talking children yet, but your friends,
right?
Then you shouldn't trust your intuition, because you're making that like minds. You really want to find out if you are like-minded by sharing what's important to you.
Right. So find out whether you really are like-minded by being honest about who you are.
Yes. I mean, you don't have time after you've been divorced to have your heart broken over and over and over again. You have a family, you need to get busy in life, and you need someone as serious as you are about moving forward.
Right. And I know that's a hard one, because a lot of times as women, we tend to lead with our heart. You know, we want to have those feelings and emotions, and we want to feel those connections. I know for myself personally, it was a lot more emotional needs than it was actual physical, tangible needs, physical needs like, you know, sex or anything else. It was more wanting that companionship. And because of that, I allowed that desire to have that connection to cloud my intuition, because I wanted it. And so I think it's really about taking time to also reevaluate and take stock of who you are and what you want.
Yes.
And then that way, when you are putting yourself in these situations with these people, it's done intentionally, and it's done knowing exactly what it is that you want, so that you can identify it when you see it, or don't waste time with someone who is obviously against that model that you've created.
Well, and I tell people all the time, and it may sound clinical, but you know what? That first year is really a research project. So, yes, your heart needs to be, you know, somebody needs to get under your skin, but you need to see really how this person's going to treat his friends, your parents, his colleagues. You really need to see who the person is. And so it's a research project. And as you said, if you want companionship, you might let that cloud, you know, how disrespectful he was to a waiter, which
you don't
want to miss that.
Right, because that is telling. My dad used to always say that you can tell a lot about a person not by the way that they treat their peers, but by the way they treat people who they feel are beneath them.
Yep.
And I've always used that as a model.
Yes, and I think that, you know, see how someone treats people when they're down and out, and see how someone treats people when they're on the top of their game. So.
Right. And the point of that is that it takes time to do that, because you're not going to see all of those situations in one meeting or two meetings, or the fabulous third date rule. That's not going to become evident in that short period of time.
That's correct.
So I know that some of the most common questions that I receive, you know, when it comes to dating after divorce, are kind of centered around how to do it in a way that's respectful to your children. And I know that was a big concern for me as well. Do you have any suggestions on how our listeners can enjoy, you know, the power that comes with being an eligible single woman while still respecting their children's feelings?
I think probably my single biggest issue here is timing. You know, your children are going to know that they are going to be part of a divorced family long after you and your partner have had difficulties, hopefully have tried to save the marriage. You don't usually tell children until they don't have a vote anymore, not that they do have a vote, but
right.
They usually get the mommy and daddy are going to get divorced. Maybe there's been a lot of fighting in the house, but it's new information. So you may be ready to move on, but they've got to figure out different houses, different rules. What's okay to say in this house? What's okay to say in that house? Are the kids going to like them? Their world has turned upside down. So I think the biggest thing, damage that people do, is think that your child cares about your latest squeeze. They don't. So 9 times out of 10, most people are going to have a free week or free days. And I think that that's when you start your dating. Your children do not have to be in that. And they certainly don't have to be in every person that you date and then that falls apart and then you date another and that falls apart. The kids get attached and it's over and over loss that they have no control over.
Right.
So I think if you're serious about you're looking for a partner who shares, who has a family, shares the values you do, you've been dating for 6 months, I think then you start and you know this person, at least he's presenting that he cares about what you care about and he wants what you want, then I think you can start in a public place, have him show up like at a park or at a baseball game or things like that, and it can be introduced as mommy's friend. But I just think that all has to be taken slowly, and then gradually he becomes more part of family stuff. But the romance stuff, I think you just need to wait on that.
Right, right. And I know for me it was at first it was really hard to reconcile myself with the fact that, you know, yes, I could date and do it. I knew that I could date and do it when my children weren't there. That was for me was an obvious. I wasn't going to be parading, you know, the new uncle around my kids.
Right.
But what was not obvious to me was as I thought, well, okay, because I am a single mom and I want to portray this really, not portray because it was true, but have a be a good model for my children. I didn't want them to see me as being morally loose or sleeping around or, oh, mom's got another boyfriend again, you know, that sort of thing. So it was like I got to a point where I was trying to figure out how to balance my physical needs,
yep.
to put it lightly, with my desire to be respectful for my children. And so what ended up happening is that, of course, my physical needs lost out. And what I've learned since then is that it's okay to have that healthy relationship with someone else, but you can do it on your own time.
Yes, yes. You need to do that part on your own time until you are so secure or as secure as we can be in this day and age that as you start to hold hands in front of the children or kiss or put a hug, when the person spends the night, if you're just absolutely as sure can be that this is right, that will get translated down to the children. And the truth is they want both parents happy because that's going to make their life easier.
Right.
They just don't want to know about every guy.
Right, exactly.
They want to be saved for the guy that they're going to have to get to know and the guy that hopefully you're going to spend the rest of your life with.
Right, so it's not just about emotionally making sure that they're the right person. There's also a way to do it in a way that lets them see how responsible, emotionally healthy people enter into a relationship and take it to the next level, because you're modeling for them. You know, you're providing them with an example of what's going, you know, of how it is in normal life or what they should expect as an adult. You know, so.
And before we had divorce, we didn't have this part of family.
Right, right. And
they
weren't
taught about dating from their parents. They were taught about intact family from their parents.
Right, right. And I think that, and that's an important thing to understand that, you know, although we're not, this generation isn't creating the rules. Obviously, we're not the first generation of people out there to be divorced and have children. But I think that right now there's an open consciousness that, that, you know, in the past, people weren't as concerned about the effect of their actions on their children as they are now. And now we're more aware that the things that we're doing while we're in front of our kids
yes.
have a major impact on the way that they view things. So, you know, just make sure that when you're modeling that behavior, I guess is what I'm trying to say, is that when you're modeling that behavior for your children, what are you modeling for them? And
yes.
try and look at it from that perspective and say, you know, I want them to see how a healthy couple moves along. So the best way for me to do that is to interact in a healthy way with the person that I want to move forward with. You know, because let's just say that you decide that you don't want your children, you know, you don't want your children to see you dating. You don't want your children to see you sharing a bed or a bedroom, not necessarily that they're going to see you sharing a bed, but know that you are spending the night with another man, right, with a man that's not their father. So you don't ease them into that at all. But you're moving along at a healthy pace with this person that you're in a relationship with, and finally you decide that you want to take it to the next level of moving in together or getting married. And all of a sudden, if you haven't really allowed your children to ease into it, you've now modeled for them not the dating part, not the having a healthy relationship and what that looks like, not how two respectful partners treat each other. No, you're modeling for them that you meet someone and you move in together.
Right, right.
Right. And so just be aware of that the impact of what you're showing your kids.
Well, and I think Steve Harvey, and I use him because I think he's got some his book is Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man, but he mm-hmm. Before I recommend, he recommends introducing the children earlier because mm-hmm. he feels like you want to see if this person's, you know, if the energy is going to be all right between the two. I think you got to take longer to get to know the person before you start to integrate. So we have a little difference. I would take longer just because I think you got to. I think
right.
90 days is a good rule where people start to, their stuff starts to hang out and you can see who someone is. But then I think you've got to start integrating that person because his relationship with your children is part of your assessing him.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know when my current husband and I just made the decision that he was going to actually meet my children, we definitely eased into it. And we did wait. We waited longer. We eased into it. And in every level, in every step where we as a couple knew that we wanted to progress, we sat back and said, okay, now how can we make this easy for the kids? So
yeah.
Even when we made the decision to move in together, and I know it sounds like, man, that's a whole lot of thinking, talking, and moving in a relationship that normally just sort of happens. But when you have kids involved, you really have to be respectful of the impact that this is going to have on their lives. So we even made sure that when we moved in together, we did it at a time when it was best for the kids so that it created the least amount of disturbance in their lives.
I absolutely think so. But I don't think it's a lot if you understand that that kind of preparation is going to make your life so much easier if you respect your children and think of their needs at this time, I think you'll avoid some of the nightmare blended families stories that we all know about. So maybe it seems like a lot of talking, but in the end it really isn't. It's just being respectful of all the parties when you're blending a family.
Right, and I think that it actually ended up making, you know, my husband and I's relationship that much stronger because we had to learn how to communicate with each other really well before we even decided to get married.
Yes.
And
yes.
And how to be attuned and open to one another's feelings as we were moving along. And I think that any time that you can do that in a relationship, whether it's for your children, whether it's a coworker, whether it's your ex-partner, you know, whoever it is, whatever relationship it is, being open to that and effectively communicating so that you make sure that everybody's needs and feelings are taken care of before you move forward is always the best option.
I agree.
So what are some absolute don'ts about dating after divorce that our listeners should be aware of as they move forward?
You know, I've just posted a couple of articles, which might be good for the, for your listeners to go to my website. I was interviewed by Vice magazine about dating a sociopath. So we're taking the, I mean, that's an oxymoron. You really don't want to do that. But we're taking probably the worst example. And then I followed up with that on writing, giving you tools how to beat a sociopath at his own dating game. And it's going to be a lot of what I said, but I think these are two articles, and they're getting great response. People are saying, well, we should know that, because the damage done by a sociopath, someone who takes advantage of you, who's there as an opportunist person who has no conscience, that is what you're wanting to weed out.
Mm-hmm.
So I've given, you know, sort of what I'm telling you right now. You need to keep your heart in your body and protect it until you know who the person is. I strongly recommend that women don't pay when you're asked out by a man. I think you should go to where the man can afford to take you, unless there's some prearranged, we're going to split this. But if you're dating a sociopath, you know, he's going to forget his wallet. So I think you need to protect yourself in these areas. I think women, again, the chameleon and the savior, that's not your job. And if you're running around and, again, with a sociopath, you're going to have somebody who's got all sorts of, I lost my wallet, my car broke down, I don't have a place. And the next thing I know, I see clients, they've paid the bills, they've loaned them the car, they've moved them in, and they're only going to feel used. So there's some extreme examples, but what I'm recommending, I think, is just a good roadmap for taking care of yourself when you're dating. And I'm a big proponent of making requests. Ask for what you need. If you get a good guy, he really wants to know how to take care of you, because men want their women to be happy. And
yes,
what makes him happy is not necessarily what makes you happy. So if you love something, he needs to know that. If things are important to you, he needs to know that. So I'm a big proponent of making requests, both parties. So you get to know, can that person take care of you? And another big recommendation I make is, of course, taking the time. Get to know your person. It's a research project. See if you're like-minded and see if what the breakdowns are going to be and the areas of challenge. Because if you think there are none, then you're not doing your homework.
Right, right. And my husband and I always use this example because it's the best relationship I know. No. In our situation, he said, you know, and I told him that you're perfect for me. And he said, well, I think I'm worried that you're putting me up on a pedestal because I have my flaws. And I said, no, you're perfect for me as you are. I know and understand what your flaws are, and I accept them. I accept that I'm able to deal with them, you know, warts and all.
That's
so for me,
a great conversation. You know, if a lot of couples got to that point where they were able to have that conversation, we'd have a lot more success.
Right. And this was, I think it was right before we actually moved in together. I really took stock of not who he was, you know, and I think that's an important step that women miss because we want everything to be perfect, is taking stock of who the person really is. You know, take the rose-colored glasses off.
Yep.
And look at who they are. Do they have annoying habits? Because everybody has them.
Yep.
And acknowledging whether or not, because you know yourself better than anybody else does, acknowledging whether or not that's something 5, 10, 15 years from now you're going to be able to live with. And
can you resolve conflict? I mean,
right,
you're going to disagree about things. I think we've discussed this before, but there's a person in the Northwest who can diagnose whether couples are going to be together just on the first 20 minutes of watching them resolve conflict. If you're respectful of your partner and their different opinions, you have
right.
a much greater chance of crossing the finish line. Then, and I've had these people in my office, we've all seen them, who are just screaming and yelling at each other and calling each other names and you're a liar and this, that, the other thing. That's not going to work.
Right. It's not. And I know for me, a big telling thing for me in our relationship was, well, although we have disagreements, I don't ever remember either one of us having raised our voice at each other. And when we do have those disagreements, to an outsider, it looks like a discussion.
That's
it
great.
Looks like we're just talking about something because that's how we work things out between the two of us. So because we're very aware that each of us are entitled to our own opinion.
Yeah.
So it's not about arguing over who's right.
Well, and what I usually find in those situations is if each person is allowed respectfully to have their opinion, the couple usually comes to a better solution than either one of them individually as a
right.
couple.
Right. So I think it's a matter of not trying to make everything roses and not trying to make everything seem as though this person is perfect in every way, shape, or form. It's not a fairy tale. You need to look at it in terms of, you know, who this person is, and like I use the term warts and all, like who they are. What are these things that they do that annoy you? And honestly, look at it. If it's that they talk poorly or they treat waitresses poorly, then really look at that behavior and think about what it is that upsets you about it, what you don't like about it, and whether or not you're willing to deal with it, you know, for the rest of your life, because that's the reality. If you're planning on moving in together and you're planning on introducing them to your children and making a life together, then you should be planning on that being a permanent fixture.
Yes. Yes.
And
that's a big one.
Yeah. And not labeling it in terms of, if only he would.
Right. Right.
I would love it if he could.
Yeah.
So can you recommend a few exercises that our listeners can do to help them build up their backbone power?
Yes, and I think if people could, when I was doing my exercises to do this, we had fun. And if you could pick a friend and start by having the friend ask you for something, and the only thing you're allowed to do is say no very graciously, and have the friend really try to guilt you, and you just keep saying no, thank you for asking. I think if you could do that and see what happens to your body, you will find there are so many people who can't say no and they can't make requests, but you will find that it's really just retraining your body. And then I think it's great. Credit card companies and the cell phone companies aren't going to like what I'm going to say, but you know, you can get those finance charges removed if you call your bank or your credit card, or you can negotiate with a cell phone company. One of the greatest exercises you could do is take a friend and go try to buy a car and see how you get worked and see how, I mean, remember, I think it's in my book where the assistant manager said, now, if I take this offer to my manager, you have to buy it. And I said, see you later.
But
practice in all those situations. I know some people are offended that if you negotiate, but I see no reason that if you're in a store and you want to buy 5 sweaters that you can ask, is there any discount if I buy 5 of these? I mean, they can say no. But I would practice that,
mm-hmm.
because the hardest usually is with our loved one. So practice on these other people, because it's their job to take care of you. They're in the business of service. And so many people just think a finance charge is a finance charge. No, not really. If you are not, if you keep your books well and your bills paid and you're a good customer, there's times when people will do things for you. So it's a good feeling to be able to make something happen like that. I would recommend everybody pick one of those and start to do it.
Absolutely. I know, I remember one of the first things that I did on my own, and I felt so proud of myself, was I had internet. You know, I had like a bundle package, internet, phone, whatever. And my contract, you know, obviously after your first year, you know, your bundle package goes up. And I got my first bill, and it was, you know, through almost three times what it was originally. And so I contacted the phone company and I said, you know, this is what happened and I don't want this service anymore. I just want internet. And they said, oh, well, you know, that price is only good for new customers. I said, so what you're saying is that it's okay to be nice to your new customers, but to do things like this to your old customers.
Right.
And then I just was consistent and I just said, no, I'm sorry, I refuse to pay that much. And, oh, well, let me talk to my manager and see if I can help you out. So here's the next package deal. No, I'm sorry, that's not the price I was paying, so I'm not going to pay that.
Yep.
I'm only going to pay this price. And just going through that process, it was like, wow, I can do this. I can.
Yes,
totally,
you can.
You know, and so I've taken it as far as I've gotten new cars. And when I go into the dealership, I go in with a list of what I want. And I tell them, it doesn't matter what the make or model is. I don't care what that is. It has to have these specific things. And this is all I'm willing, this is the most. This is it.
Yep.
That I'm willing to pay for it. So I don't know what to tell you. And, you know, I mean, of course, it means you're not going to be driving the brand new BMW if that doesn't fit in your budget. But you know what you want. And it's just being connected to that. And being willing to, you know, and I'm going to use air quotes here, fight, because you're not going to go in there and punch them out. But but stand up for it and say, I want this and I think I deserve it. Why don't I deserve it? You know, and,
well,
and
I think women, until you start to do this, you do not understand the dignity you get, the power you feel, you have a place in the universe. You can make things happen. And I just think women, everybody is attractive when they don't let people use and abuse you.
Right. There's a lot of power that comes with that. And it just sort of, you know, glows from the inside out.
Yes.
That you can't fake that, and it lends confidence to you, and that carries over in all other areas of your life if you allow it to.
I totally agree.
So, you know, the last question I want to ask you is, if you could give our listeners just one other piece of advice about dating after divorce, what would it be and why?
I would just remind them that resentment kills, and if you're not taking care of yourself, that anger has to go somewhere. It'll go in you, and it will fester in there, and that is just the worst thing you can do to yourself, not in absolutely every way. Hopefully, people negotiated well and fairly in their divorce, and they are not having resentful issues around money then. Hopefully you fought for your marriage so you're not resentful. I mean, I think I may have said this to you. I said to one person who went through a very painful breakup, did you ever tell him that you wanted to fight for him? Did you ever take a stand? Because so many people, if they feel hurt, they walk away.
Right.
It never occurred to her that she could say, you may want this, but I don't. I love you. I want this. And just having that awareness that you can take a stand for that, I would also tell you, take a breath, get a diary, write your must-have, must-not-have preferences, however you make your list. Remember, get your lessons from your old marriage. Don't repeat things. But if you find that you are doing the same thing and getting the same results, then take a break, find a therapist, go to a group, read a book, do something where you just, you know, one bad marriage, that's tough. You don't want to make the same mistake twice. So get your lessons. Having a backbone is going to keep away the resentment. It will enable you to move on, to let go, to be happy. And that's what your kids want, and that's what a future partner wants, for you to not be living in the past and to be out in the world able to make things happen for your family.
And I think that is powerful, not just in looking for a partner, but in all aspects of your life. And I know for me, this is my third marriage, which I've mentioned before, but in the second one, after it was over, I thought, you know, what was it that I was looking for? Because, you know, if you make a mistake once, you know, okay, yeah, it was a mistake. It was a learning experience. When you do it a second time, you got to start to notice that you're a common element.
Yes. Yes.
In your relationship, yeah, troubles. So I started to say, okay, so, you know, what are some things that I'm attracted to and why am I attracted to them? You know, for me, one of them was I'm tattooed, you know, big deal. You know, nowadays it's not that big of a thing, but I was always attracted to men who were tattooed, but not because of the tattoos, but because the sort of rough and tough, manly man, I can take care of you sort of macho facade, yep, or, that came with it. So when I was actually making my list, on there was must not have tattoos. So that... So that it kind of removed that part from the equation. But, you know, it's about being really in tune to what it is that you're attracted to and why you're attracted to it. And, you know, using that experience to say, okay, so why didn't that work for me? You know,
and
why wasn't
that
okay?
And I think going back to what we're both saying is if you're living someone else's dream, no one will ever get to see your dream. And when,
yes,
someone can see your dream because you have a voice, you got clear, that's when it's all going to start to happen. And that sounds like what you did an expert job in, is getting clear. Wait a minute, I was a little fuzzy here, so
yeah,
let me clear this up.
Let's be as specific as possible.
Yes.
And I always say it's not, although I use a physical example, having a tattoo, it's not necessarily always about that physical piece. So, yes, it's great to say I want a man who's over 6'5", is very athletic, you know, all of those things, those physical things. It's great to say that I want a man who's got blue eyes, whatever it is. But it's really more about what it is about those physical things that attract you. Because what you may find is that you find a partner who meets those emotional needs and is not anywhere near the physical things that you thought that you needed thought you were attracted to.
Yeah, and I think if the universe wants to play with you, that's exactly, you're going to get a package that you wouldn't recommend, that you wouldn't recognize. I would say put those 6'5", athletic, all that kind of stuff in preferences. Because
right,
you may get all of the really important qualities in a package that you will learn to love and you will love, but left on your own, you would not have been able to see this person because you had such a blindness to the package.
Right, and it was changing that perception and that idea of the package that led me to finding my husband who fits none of those physical, well, not none of those, sorry, but who doesn't fit my typical physical package preferences. So what I was normally attracted to was very tall, well-built, muscular men who were macho type of guys. But the reason why I liked them is because I felt protected. I felt secure. I felt that they would be able to take care of me. And in looking at what those feelings were, I was able to, when I met my husband, say, yeah, you know what, he's not that. He's not that preference. He's not that physical package, but I feel cherished. I feel protected. Because I know that he won't intentionally hurt me. He's not that type of person who would do something like that. You know, so I took the time to get to know him, which you talked about, you know, taking the time to truly know who they are. And I was myself with him, which is, you know, I'm strong, I'm very independent, I'm very opinionated, tend to be a bit of an activist. And finding someone who is man enough to stand next to me and not feel threatened by those qualities in me.
Well, I've not only have you and I never met, and I've certainly never met your husband, but I would tell you, and I would tell the listener, that the energy between the two of you comes across in Facebook as such a lovely, playful, loving, fun energy that I think you really hit the jackpot.
Right, and I did. He is amazing. But and I think that, and I try to use that as an example, because if you had told me post-second divorce that I would find someone who I could have that chemistry with and that I could have that relationship with, I would have told you were crazy. I'm never getting divorced again. You know, I'm going to learn from my mistakes this time. All of those negative thoughts and energy about being in a relationship. And I'm never going to be financially dependent on another person. I'm not, you know, I'm not doing all of it, any of it. So, and I say, and I use my relationship now because there are people listening right now that I know they are so deep into their divorce, you know, the crazy chaos that the thought that they could even have something like that is so foreign.
Yes.
And such a crazy idea that it's almost easy to dismiss. And so I use my relationship a lot because I want people to know that it is not only possible, even for someone who is and my husband calls me the good kind of crazy, someone who's the good kind of crazy like me can find someone who can see past all that other stuff to who you truly are. So, and as always, it has been such a pleasure speaking with you today.
With you as well, as always.
And I know that you have a gift that you'd like to offer our listeners, so can you just tell us what it is?
If you go to my website, you get to download the first chapter of my book. And I, since our last interview, have got lots of articles on there that just will help you in all areas of your life. I've got parenting articles. Again, this not dating a sociopath. Tools for dating. I think that's getting a lot of attention. So I invite people to go to the website, download the chapter. There's a lot of free information out there.
Right. And the information and instructions on how you can take advantage of downloading that offer is going to be found in your email for this interview. And if you'd like more information about Dr. Brown or her work, you can visit her website at www.backbonepower.com. And thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you for doing this. You're amazing.
So are you. And I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You as well.